Wednesday, November the 2nd, the last of the 17 days, began in the Westwood Hotel in Anchorage, Alaska, only some 2 or 3 hours after we'd gone to bed. A long nap, but now time is meaningless, and I'm groggy with weariness. I had coffee at 6, and at 6:30 the hairdresser, and at 7, Lyndon and I went to the Top of the World room for breakfast. There were great expanses of glass that looked out to the mountains of Alaska on all sides. The tables were crowded with the officials of this next-to-youngest state, the governor, Senator Bartlett and Vidy, Senator Greening without his wife, she's in a wheelchair most of the time, I'm told, enthusiastic Democrats. Breakfast was already in progress, and we gulped a few bites between handshakes and introductions, and then we all rose and went into the ballroom where Governor Egan made a welcoming speech, and Lyndon responded, "It has been the most rewarding, the most thrilling, the most encouraging journey of my life," he said. "I believe it may also have been the most important and the most historic." And then he signed the fish protein concentrate bill. Where better? And then, a scant hour after we'd walked into the room, we left in a motorcade for the airport. There were lots of Boy Scouts in the lobby and along the route. I kept on looking for the Eskimo blanket toss exhibition the paper had described, but I didn't see them. To bounce a person 30 feet in the air from a walrus hide blanket. There were lots of parkas and boots, Eskimos along the route. I rode with Vidy. I'd had a note in my room. Apparently it was written by a colored woman who had known us in Texas, who now lived in Anchorage, and who had hoped to see us. She was active in Democratic affairs. Vidy knew her name. But alas, in the crowd we never made contact. I was surprised at the number of Negroes I did see. It's a bleak, forbidding country. Snow-capped mountains in the distance were beautiful, but the city around me harsh and gray and dreary. There was little green to soften it, and the buildings looked new and raw. There were brief goodbyes at the airport. And then, at 8:40, wheels up for Washington. Liz and Bess had planned a farewell skit, a little ceremony for me to say thank you to everybody, and something we could all enjoy laughing at together. So an hour out, with complete disregard for time, Bloody Marys were passed, and I introduced the cast. Jim Symington had written the skit. The name was, "We're Landing, Mr. President." He was the master of ceremonies, and he and Bess and Clark sang two songs. Then Clark read an hilarious release, presumably Jim's instructions to Lyndon as he landed in Country X, the description of whose customs food and chief of state should never see the light of day. It was such fun. It reminded me of Clark's family parties on New Year's. Then I rose and thanked everyone for the long hours and the hard work, and congratulated all of us on living through all the crises, and gave out the Asian medals to everyone who didn't already have one. Then I ate lunch and took a nap. Sometime in the afternoon, time was only a variable on this trip. I dressed and came to the front of the plane and talked with Clark. As we approached Washington, the weather began to get very bad. Never in all my experience have I been on a big plane, tossed and twisted and plunged like this huge Air Force One did. 31,000 miles of good flying, and now within an hour of home, I was scared white. I looked at Ashton, and she looked like she was ready to faint. Liz was sending inquiries to the pilot. I knew it was no laughing matter with her. I was holding on to the arm of the State Department man next to me, who amazingly did not appear frightened, and I'm sure he had blue marks the next morning. It seemed endless, but at 8 o'clock we sat down at Dulles in a windy, wet evening, and there was the familiar red carpet leading to the speaker stand and the familiar bouquet of red roses, the last for a long time, members of the cabinet lining our way and the diplomatic corps and other high officials to greet us. I looked up and saw a great big banner across the terminal saying, "Well done, Mr. President." It was a 21-gun salute with Lyndon at attention. He always seems taller at this moment. And the Star-Spangled Banner rang out. And if anybody in our party didn't get goosebumps, they must have been unconscious. Home. I had felt a little bit that way. In Alaska, it is the United States. But here we are, really home, and the great trip is over. It was quite a crowd. Later the paper said 5,000, many of them youngsters, mostly squealing and happy, waving flags, in the distance a few Vietnik signs. There was Margie McNamara, wearing her husband's raincoat, which came to her ankles, and a hat made out of a folded newspaper, like all the children make, and Lee with no hat, laughing big, and faithful Virginia Rusk to meet the secretary. Hewitt made a welcome home speech, and then Lyndon rose. By this time, the rain was really falling. Someone handed me an umbrella. I tried to hold it over him and did for a while, and then Hubert took it from me. speaking of the Manila Conference and its results, Lyndon said, "History will decide. No new treaties were made. No new commitments were offered." The theme of it was, "I returned much more confident and much more hopeful than when I left." I told them about the great vitality of the new Asia and the unity of all the chiefs of state that met at Manila. These nations combined totaled almost 300 million people. He had to tell about his visit to our troops in Vietnam, and here he was emotional. Then we were in the chopper and headed for the White House, where the staff was lined up on the lawn in spite of the lashing rain. And there was a double receiving line in the diplomatic reception room, an excited welcome from all the folks at home, and goodbyes thrown over my shoulder to my fellow travelers. We went upstairs to the second floor. The Kentners and Vicky and Simon and the Humphreys joined us, and later, Jack and Mary Margaret and the Roger Stevens. It was nearly 11 when we had dinner. I have no concept of how many hours had elapsed since I had waked up at 6 in the hotel in Anchorage. I was past being tired and was sort of numb. It was after midnight when the guests left. I sank to sleep in my own bed, feeling I'd like to be there for at least a week.